what comes out more than anything else is that they were living in the communities and they experienced what the communities they lived amongst experienced. And like many other people higher up in the church, and certainly priests, who would have a certain function, a more ritualistic function. So the level of pastoral care and the sort of experiences they had were actually quite unique.
Mm. So, I mean, by living with the people, you mean living in houses beside people, like they weren't living on the church grounds, or they weren't living cut off in some monastery or something?
Yeah, precisely. I mean, you have sisters who actually lived on peace lines with, you know, part of the house in a loyalist community and part of the house in a nationalist community. So they were very much there, part and parcel of what was going on. And some of the most moving testimony, one of the sisters in particular, Sister Liz Smith, her vocation came from the fact that she was brought up in the Falls Road during the worst of the Troubles, and the fact that the persons who were always there for them, be it in the hospitals, in the schools, wherever, were the sisters. They were just, what she said is they just were always there. You didn't think about it because they didn't say, we're here, or we're doing this, or we're doing that. They just were there. And they were more or less taken for granted, which is why I think nobody's really looked at them, because they worked very quietly behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. And did sisters have a particular vocation to working in the Troubles? I mean, were there people coming from other countries to work there, or was it that they were naturally ordained there and they more or less found themselves there?
Actually, one of the interesting things is obviously sisters from the north knew about the Troubles. Sisters from the Republic didn't. And what they both sides have said is that there was no actual preparation. You weren't given any training for, you know, conflict and what's going to happen to you. You just would be assigned to teach music or to work in a hospital or whatever you were assigned to do, and that was your job. But you weren't given any particular knowledge or background or orientation, as we would call it today. So you found yourself very much in the thick of things. And I think for some of them, actually, it was a very traumatic experience. And there's what comes through, particularly in these witness seminars, which are run as conversations, it's almost served as a therapy that they can talk to each other about the feelings and realise that other sisters were actually feeling the same. And a lot would depend on the sort of community that you were living with. So some would feel, because a lot of the sisters are involved with setting up organisations to help people, because there was nothing there. And they realised there was a need there for the community, so they went about and did things themselves. And I think one of the things that people don't realise is their crucial role in integrated education. Against the wishes of the local communities and also often against the wishes of the church itself, because people had fought so hard to get Catholic schools and to maintain standards and a variety of reasons why they didn't want integrated education. But for the sisters, what they saw is the future depends on young people living together, being educated together, growing up knowing each other.
But I mean, they themselves being Catholic, did that make them a target? Did people look at them and say, okay, you know, maybe you're promoting this integrated education, maybe you're promoting an integrated community, but at the end of the day, you're Catholic and maybe there's an agenda there?
Definitely. And this is one of the things that they talk about. Another incident from the narrative from the witness seminar was where some sisters had a prayer group, and the prayer group was for everybody, Catholic or Protestant, and one of their members was murdered, and they wanted to show their respect for him and his family, and they went, and obviously he was from the Unionist community. They went to the house, to the wake, and when they arrived, everybody walked out, and the family had to come to them. But they said it was actually it reflected their own naivety. That they should have realised the extent to which they would be identified with the perpetrators. But they also talked about the way the media would represent them. So for them, if there was a murder in the nationalist community, they would want to support the family, regardless of what that person had done or not done, whether they were an innocent victim or whether they were a perpetrator. There was a family there that had sustained a loss. But the press would always present them as, or here they are at an IRA funeral, and suggest that they were supporting, the violence and the taking a certain sectarian perspective, which actually wasn't true. They talked about how, on the whole, they took the same attitude of the church, which was that you condemned the violence from all sides. Be it the RUC, be it the British soldiers, be it the various paramilitary groupings, because there were so many. But there's also testimony to where they were personally affected and had losses in their own families or amongst friends or relatives, and that they then felt the anger of other people in the communities and learned, because of that experience, I'm feeling the same levels of anger. If somebody put a gun in my hand, perhaps I could do that. So it was a learning process for them, and that's what comes through. And they talk about liberation theology as well. That, because remember, many of these sisters would have worked in other conflict zones, and they talk about that radicalizing experience. And we tend to think about liberation theology as something associated with Africa or Latin America and the various conflicts there. But for some, that radicalization, that awakening to the political, socio-economic aspects and so forth, actually came from Northern Ireland and what the nuns experienced there.
But you talked as well about when they had a personal suffering. I mean, when somebody within their own community died, and it's easy, as you say, well, it's not easy, but as an outsider, you can say, look, everybody has played a part in the violence. Everybody has contributed, but everyone has contributed peace as well. But when you personally experience a loss at the hands of a particular group, you know, your objectivity can go out the window a bit there. I mean, you said that was something they struggled with.
One sister, who was actually the founder of WAVE, Sister Mary McNeice, talked very eloquently about her experience of losing a close friend from a family that was very religious, and the way in which the family looked to her to say, God will bring something good out of this. And she didn't feel that. And she found that it was actually a challenge to her faith and what she was doing, and that it took her a long time to actually fully recover what she'd lost, as it were, and to understand the level of violence and anger that she felt. And she said long term, she could see the advantages, that she could then empathise more with the men of violence and understand why they were able to pick up the gun in the way that she hadn't done before. Before, she would have just condemned them outright, all violence is wrong. And it gave her an understanding, but she said it was a very difficult process in terms of the way it challenged her faith and the way in which she dealt with it. And what actually happened to her experience was that she was sent to England, she was given lots and lots of counselling, and then when she came back, she still found herself feeling inadequate and guilty in terms of being able to help this family who were still looking to her to give them support. And she thought, you know, what you need is the same counselling I had. And that led her to set up an organisation, very primitive, but for all members of the community, not just for the nationalist community, so that people who'd been bereaved could come together and talk about their feelings and about their losses. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think, again, it's something that's underappreciated, the number of organisations for peace and conflict resolution that these sisters are involved in. And the interesting thing is, I mean, I'm still in touch, obviously, it's a quite a new project, I'm still in touch with the sisters, is now that Northern Ireland's in a post-conflict situation and experiencing other sorts of divisions, particularly with new migrants and refugees, these same sisters are now working with them to help them. Mm-hmm. You know, so these are very committed women who see service as a privilege and in no way feel sorry for themselves and what they went through. They're very much about, it was a privilege. It was a privilege to be there and to help these people.
Yeah.
Mounted.
And you talked as well, I mean, you talked about the woman who, the nun that people were looking to for support. And, you know, particularly in troubles and in troubled times or in areas of conflict, like, people start to question, well, you know, where is God in all of this? You know, and on the one hand, sometimes violence and conflict can bring out the best in people, and you can see great heroic sacrifices and service like these women have done. But it also brings out the worst in people too. And, you know, it has to open the question and it was difficult for her to even look at that. But like, to, you know, why does this kind of conflict happen? What kind of God allows this conflict to happen, and how can they explain that?
What they talked about was more the challenge, the personal challenge to themselves and to their own faith. And it certainly did change them. But the message that came across was, in terms of the faith they had when they went into the church, they no longer had that same perspective, but they still felt they were in the right place doing the right thing.